Animal brains, staggering stuff, even in bees. Let's join Carl Smith.
Who knew that bees could be art critics? I'm currently just outside of a beehive that sits on top of the Queensland Brain Institute at the University of Queensland. Here, Dr. Judith Reinhardt and her colleagues have shown that bees can pick the difference between artworks by Monet and Picasso. However, this research was not designed purely to show that bees have an eye for fine art. Understanding how a bee sees has important applications in understanding our own brains and also in designing intelligent, unmanned vehicles. Now, Dr. Reinhardt, you're very interested in how a bee sees. How does a bee see?
Well, bees have different eyes from ours, and they actually have different colour perception from ours. So they don't see red, they see red as black. So if we look at a painting or if we look at a tree, it looks very different from what a bee or an insect or other animal see. First of all, the colours would be different. And second of all, insects with their compound eyes don't have a focused image. They have sort of a blurry, pixelated, fuzzy image with fuzzy edges. And you have to imagine that if you don't focus very well and look at something, this is about what a bee would see.
Your recent study, entitled Honeybees Can Discriminate Between Monet and Picasso Paintings, sets up bees to discern between Impressionist and Cubist paintings. Why would you do that?
We actually came about this because we were interested in how humans discern artistic styles. And there's also another recent study looking at pigeons, and pigeons can determine what's a Picasso and what's a Monet painting. So we thought we'd have a look whether insects can do this, and we found they can, which is in itself extremely interesting because it basically tells us the mechanisms that are used to distinguish between artistic styles are quite simple visual mechanisms and not a higher cognitive function.
So when someone says that your brain is as small as a bee's, it's actually a compliment.
It is a huge compliment. I do hope we can do more things than bees can do, but we were quite amazed to see that honeybees were able to pick up some sort of visual cues that tells us this is a Picasso and this is a Monet. And they could do this not only with paintings that we trained them to distinguish, but also with novel Monet and Picasso paintings they had never seen before.
Researchers maintained beehives on the roof of the building and tricked the bees to fly into one of their controlled experiments using sugar water.
Bees are like little kids. They do anything for a bit of sweet. They sit outside and forage happily on campus. And whenever we offer them some sugar, we get them to participate in our experiments. You have a tissue soaked in sugar water and you let them land on it. And then you transport them step by step into the spot where you want to run the experiment.
This particular experiment guided the bees through a tunnel and then presented them with a choice of a Monet or a Picasso picture. The pairs of paintings were controlled for colour and luminescence.
The bee learns to fly through it. It's about a metre long. And at the end of the box, at the end wall, we had these two photographs of a Monet painting and a Picasso painting. And there were small holes in each photograph. And the bee learned to fly through one of these holes, and she received a bit of sugar water right behind it. But to make sure they didn't use individual colour cues, we also showed them the same paintings in grey scale versions, in black and white, and they could do just as well.
So what is it then that they're able to pick up between these two different styles of painting?
We think from the experiment that we've done so far that it's probably just something very simple like the underlying statistical regularities that are consistent across all Picassos and all Monets. If you look at 300 Picassos and 300 Monets, you pick out that there are certain regularities that are typical for an artist's style. If that's the case, we think it's quite likely that this is also what humans do.
Although a bee's brain is only around the size of a sesame seed, it has many parallels to a human brain.
The bee brain is very, very small, about 1 million neurons, but the structure is quite similar to ours. The areas in the bee brain or in all insect brains that digest and look at visual information, others that look at olfactory information, and then they have memory centres, just like ours.
It's these memory centres of the bee brain that Dr. Reinhardt and her colleagues are trying to understand.
We are quite interested in the molecular mechanisms underlying memories, And we can set up experiments like these, print images, different colours, and then have a look at their brain and extract the relevant genes and see what kind of genes are expressed depending on the different memories and what kind of, let's say, epigenetic factors are controlling and regulating these genes. This will give us a bit of an insight in very basic molecular mechanisms, how memories are formed and forgotten.
Although Dr. Reinhardt acknowledges that this paper is just a first step towards understanding how bees form and use memories, other researchers from the Queensland Brain Institute are beginning to apply bee vision to autopiloted aircraft.
Hello, I'm Andiam Srinivasan. People call me Srini.
Srini is an engineer turned neuroscientist, and he combines both fields in his laboratory.
So part of our lab works on basic fundamental vision and navigation in bees. And the other part looked at how these ideas can be applied to design new vision systems for guiding aircraft.
A crucial aspect of Professor Srinivasan's work is understanding optic flow, a motion-based style of vision that bees use to understand the world around them.
The idea is actually very simple. The reason why insects seem to need to use this is because they cannot use the most standard technique that we normally use, which is stereo vision, to work out how far away objects are. But stereo vision works well only when your two eyes are fairly far apart, like in humans. But when the two eyes are very close together, you can't use that cue. And so insects have this other cue, which is much more active, and they move in the world, and they observe how rapidly the images of objects in the world appear to move past their visual field. And the idea is very simple. If something's very close to you, it whizzes by your visual field very rapidly. And if it's something very far away, it hardly moves. And so by using that cue, you can tell how far away different objects are.
Srini and his colleagues have successfully used optic flow to automate aircraft.
We've been lucky to make a fair amount of progress in this area over the past 4 or 5 years. And for example, to stay at a constant height above the ground, all you have to do is to measure how rapidly the image of the ground appears to be moving beneath you and hold that constant. So as long as you're flying at a constant speed, that means you're flying at a constant height above the ground. So you can do terrain following, as they say, rather easily using that. Again, landing, where you aim at the point where you want to touch down, and then you simply look down beneath you at the ground and adjust your forward speed so that the ground always appears to be moving at the same speed. And by doing that, you automatically make a smooth, gentle touchdown. It's a brilliant strategy that we wouldn't have thought about until we looked at bees landing. Again, to stabilize yourself, your orientation while you're flying, you can look at the horizon the way insects do and keep the horizon level and flat, and that ensures that you're flying horizontally without rolling or pitching or yawing. You can also do extreme aerobatic maneuvers, it turns out, by controlling the position of the horizon in the way you want it to be controlled, right? So you can do all these lovely things by using mostly insect-inspired principles.
Professor Srinivasan, back to Dr. Judith Reinhardt's study, despite its uses for understanding memory and vision, she's not convinced that we can now defer to the animal kingdom for expert art advice. Given that, say, elephants can paint and that pigeons can also pick between a Monet and Picasso, do you think that an understanding of art is something that underpins all life?
No, that is a tricky, tricky question. I wouldn't go so far from our experiments that honeybees actually have an appreciation of art. What we really try to do is show that honeybees can extract visual information out of very complex visual environments and make decisions based upon this, because this is what they encounter in their daily life. When they fly out and fly into a tree, it's not just a black and white or yellow and blue cardboard, but it's a really complex environment, and they have to find their way through it, find the flower and find their way back, which requires quite a lot. And this is more where we're heading at. Why pigeons distinguish between Monet and Picasso, I couldn't tell you. But this is something we will never really know unless we can really teach animals some sort of language to communicate to us what they experience and why.
This is Carl Smith reporting from the Beehive on top of the Queensland Brain Institute at the University of Queensland.
Thanks, Carl.